This is the Cambridge Certificate in Advanced English Listening Test. Test 2. I'm going to give you the instructions for this test. I'll introduce each part of the test and give you time to look at the questions. At the start of each piece, you'll hear this sound. You'll hear each piece twice. Remember, while you're listening, write your answers on the question paper. You'll have 5 minutes at the end of the test to copy your answers onto the separate answer sheet. There'll now be a pause. Please ask any questions now because you must not speak during the test. Now open your question paper and look at part one. You'll hear three different extracts. For questions 1 to 6, choose the answer A, B or C, which fits best according to what you hear. There are two questions for each extract. Extract 1. You overhear part of a conversation between the secretary of a golf club and a visitor to the club. Now look at questions 1 and 2.
Sorry to be late. This club's a bit off the beaten track, isn't it? Thought I'd never find it.
You don't have an in-car satellite navigation system, then?
A sat-nav? No, I don't. Though I suppose I should invest in one. I often have this sort of trouble. Getting to a town's a piece of cake, but after that, well, it's not so much the cost. My friends all have them and tell me the price is going down all the time. But electronic gadgets aren't my favourite things. Fine when they work, nightmare when they don't. A little black box could hardly have been less useful than my map today, though.
I wouldn't be without mine now. I won't try and blind you with science, but I do know quite a bit about satellites. The technology's amazing. Position can be pinpointed to within a metre. Of course, accuracy is down to the mapping companies who do the updating work, but new models come out all the time. It's entirely up to you, of course, but imagine never having to ask for directions again.
That'll be good. I'll certainly give it some thought.
Now you'll hear the recording again.
Sorry to be late. This club's a bit off the beaten track, isn't it? Thought I'd never find it.
You don't have an in-car satellite navigation system, then?
A sat-nav? No, I don't. Though I suppose I should invest in one. I often have this sort of trouble. Getting to a town's a piece of cake, but after that, well, it's not so much the cost. My friends all have them and tell me the price is going down all the time. But electronic gadgets aren't my favourite things. Fine when they work, nightmare when they don't. A little black box could hardly have been less useful than my map today, though.
I wouldn't be without mine now. I won't try and blind you with science, but I do know quite a bit about satellites. The technology's amazing. Position can be pinpointed to within a metre. Of course, accuracy is down to the mapping companies who do the updating work, but new models come out all the time. It's entirely up to you, of course, but imagine never having to ask for directions again.
That'll be good. I'll certainly give it some thought.
Extract 2. You hear part of a discussion in which the anthropologist Paula Drew and the comedian Mike Morton are talking about their lives. Now look at questions 3 and 4.
We both grew up in a fairly rough part of the city, Mike, so I'm assuming you use comedy to keep yourself safe and popular in the long run.
Well, in school, as you know, if you could run fast or make people laugh, you had a very good chance of surviving and emerging unscathed. I wasn't a fast runner, so I exploited comedy to avoid unwelcome attention. It seemed to come easy, and it worked.
Your type of comedy is less spontaneous than reflective. You see things from your own point of view, don't you, and create a world for other people to see, whereas I explore the world that's already there, which most people don't see.
Don't you think that the key to achieving what you want in life is the realisation that it's going to be tough and the sheer persistence that gets you there in the end?
What you have to have is massive self-confidence. With that, you can do anything.
And being specific about what it is you want to do.
Oh, well, that goes without saying.
Now you'll hear the recording again.
We both grew up in a fairly rough part of the city, Mike, so I'm assuming you use comedy to keep yourself safe and popular in the long run.
Well, in school, as you know, if you could run fast or make people laugh, you had a very good chance of surviving and emerging unscathed. I wasn't a fast runner, so I exploited comedy to avoid unwelcome attention. It seemed to come easy, and it worked.
Your type of comedy is less spontaneous than reflective. You see things from your own point of view, don't you, and create a world for other people to see, whereas I explore the world that's already there, which most people don't see.
Don't you think that the key to achieving what you want in life is the realisation that it's going to be tough and the sheer persistence that gets you there in the end?
What you have to have is massive self-confidence. With that, you can do anything.
And being specific about what it is you want to do.
Oh, well, that goes without saying.
Extract 3. You hear part of a radio discussion about holiday reading. Now look at questions 5 and 6.
If you're English, a nice, sad 19th century romance is very useful if you're on holiday and you get attacked by homesickness, because it conjures up dripping English autumn days perfectly.
I always take something by this chap who's written a number of books about the criminal underworld of Boston, Massachusetts, which is hardly culturally or geographically a place that I know, but I find it fascinating. There's no doubt about it. If you compile, as I do, dictionaries of slang for a living, one is drawn inevitably, not, alas, to the great classics, who are on the whole rather light on slang, but to someone like this fellow, who has this amazing ability, far beyond quoting, of writing 20 or 40 pages of dialogue in almost incomprehensible slang, which I have the most wonderful time going through. I find it very alluring.
Now you'll hear the recording again.
If you're English, a nice, sad 19th century romance is very useful if you're on holiday and you get attacked by homesickness, because it conjures up dripping English autumn days perfectly.
I always take something by this chap who's written a number of books about the criminal underworld of Boston, Massachusetts, which is hardly culturally or geographically a place that I know, but I find it fascinating. There's no doubt about it. If you compile, as I do, dictionaries of slang for a living, one is drawn inevitably, not, alas, to the great classics, who are on the whole rather light on slang, but to someone like this fellow, who has this amazing ability, far beyond quoting, of writing 20 or 40 pages of dialogue in almost incomprehensible slang, which I have the most wonderful time going through. I find it very alluring.
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two.